You're listening to The Record on KUOW. I'm Arwen Nix.
And I'm Marcy Silman. Iraq faces many challenges right now, from growing violence in its northern Anbar province to civil war in neighboring Syria to the upcoming elections. The country's also trying to rebuild. 3 decades of dictatorship and war crippled the country's infrastructure. The government has plans to build a rail system, improve airports, and invest in the country's airline to serve parts of Asia and Europe. Iraqi ambassador to the U.S. Luqman Faili was in Seattle last week to buy Iraq's fourth Boeing jet, a 777. I spoke to Ambassador Faili about the challenges his country faces. Given the reason for his Seattle visit, I was curious to learn more about Iraq's domestic rebuilding efforts.
We have new airports are forming up all the time. We have a diversity of needs. One, for example, in the south of Iraq, they're talking about cargo airport. In the middle of Iraq, in Najaf and Karbala, they have the pilgrimage. And here we're talking about millions every year coming to Karbala and Najaf for religious pilgrimage. In addition to the northern airports, both in Soleimani and Erbil, there the routes toward Europe and in Asia is increasing as well. So we have a diverse need across Iraq with the financial ability for us to purchase. The Boeing planes as well, we are increasing, and we're also exploring getting some finances so that we get international companies to supplement that, primarily from the finance sector.
Ambassador, I'm curious about, in the country itself, things like road construction, expansion or improvement of the electricity grid, water supplies, things that we've heard about in this country. How would you characterize what state you're at in terms of that kind of investment and rebuilding?
We are in the early stages yet. We are yet to have cement all our international partnership with multinational companies such as Boeing and others in relation to the various sectors. We're still have a very ambitious plans to develop, for example, 2 million housing units. We're talking about roughly about 6,000 schools needs and so on. So the country now has the financial capability. Its cash sort of GDP per capita is increasing significantly. Its revenue primarily from oil increase. That's one aspect. The other aspect is the demand of the people. Having democratic systems, having a more federal, decentralized systems means that local authorities are pursuing their own ventures to provide better services, whether they are roads, bridges, and so on. We are at the early stages now of defining what we need and trying to explore major international partners for our development.
What kind of partnership do you envision with the United States?
Well, there are various sectors where we already have a strong relationship. The two primary ones are in the military, for example. We have a strong partnership with U.S. In provision of F-16s or Apache helicopters, or in provision of an air defense integrated systems or Abraham tanks. So we have that full provision of U.S. military capabilities in relation to our arms and air force. Then we have issues such as transportation, which we just talked about. Mm-hmm. For example, the exploration we're having with Boeing to increase it. We're also having other companies talking about the constructions, being involved in constructions, in addition to universities, providing us with capabilities for development of our own universities, laboratories, and so on. So we have that exploration as well. And there are side projects such as pharmaceuticals and others. These are the ones I'm exploring myself.
I know that you lived in the United Kingdom for a couple of decades during Saddam Hussein's regime, and there are many Iraqis like yourself who left the country either for political reasons or for education reasons. Many of them didn't come back. They made their homes elsewhere. What kind of intellectual capital, if you will, do you need to rebuild Iraq?
Well, majority of middle class left Iraq during the Iraq-Iran war and the Kuwait war and so on. So that's a major challenge we have, is a country cannot be developed without having a strong middle class. We're now increasing our middle class for example, university lecturers, the salaries they get are as good as anywhere else in our region. So we're trying to increase the capabilities of our middle class to be able to cement that development. In addition to that, we have a large Iraqi diaspora across the globe. Mm. In the United States, we have them in more or less all the states. Next, actually, end of April, we'll have the election. And we will talk about 10 states within the United States where the election will take place. The Iraqi diaspora will participate in the election. And this is reflective of the widespread they have in the state here. So what we are trying to do is provide them the opportunity to come back partially or fully to work with us in development of our country. So here the expertise in medical doctors, engineers, and other university lecturers and so on. So we're working with them to see what opportunities they have. However, we also know, we realize that we need to provide the best medical care, the best education for their children, in addition to provision of the paperwork for their settlement in Iraq, resettlement in Iraq. So we have challenges there. So we need to introduce new legislation and look at the diaspora as a strategic extension of our capabilities outside Iraq. That in itself is a challenge because of the spread of the diaspora, and more importantly because of the daily challenges we have in Iraq in relation to security and the political development.
I'm talking with Ambassador Luqman Feli from Iraq. He's the ambassador to the United States. And you mentioned challenges. I know that one of those is continued violence in your country, particularly in Anbar province. That's a problem when you're trying to attract expats to come back to the country. What kind of effect might that have on the April elections?
We're determined for the election to take place in time and for the maximized participation of people of Iraq, including the Anbar. Previous elections, just to put things in perspective, the participation was just over 60%. So we're looking at a high number of participations of the Iraqi people in the elections. They are eager to participate as a sign of a healthy democratic process. Bearing that in mind, we are also working with those Ambaris who left the province because of security threats. So they might be in adjacent provinces in Iraq. So we are providing capabilities for them. And in addition to the diaspora we talked about outside and across Iraq. So in that sense, we are determined for maximizing the participation and for provision of security for that to take place. We are eager for security to prevail prior to the election taking place.
Last week was the 11th anniversary of the U.S. military incursion into Iraq, and we talked with the Reuters Baghdad bureau chief at that time, and he was very pessimistic about the current situation in Iraq. And I guess in particular, he was worried about the elections. But when you, I mean, your job is to present a positive face for your country. But when you look at the current situation and look back 11 years, would you say that Iraq has moved forward, that you're at a standstill, that you're moving backwards? How do you characterize the situation?
No, I mean, if you look at the economy, for example, the GDP per capita, it's increased more than tenfold since 2003. So we know that people's ability to purchase and free market and so on are introduced. You also have a constitution with all the political parties trying to adhere to it. You have a new economical and political development. Democracy is cementing. The challenge is to move away from dictatorship in an unfriendly region, in which dictatorship used to be the norm, and with a country with more than 30 years devastation in wars and sanctions and so on, to transform that does require a significant amount of a national project and national reconciliation. We're working towards achieving that. In addition to that, we are determined, as people have seen us over the last 11 years, that we are tenacious people. We have been able to cope with terrorism. We have been able to cope with the instability of sectarianism in the whole region. We will get there. It will not be in the timeline we wish for it, but we will achieve that. The political reconciliation is taking place at a cost, we know, of the development of the country, but that's something we're capable of. Let me just make one simple statement. People have always underestimated our strength. And over the last 11 years, the resolve we have shown with election taking place, with high participation, with free election taking place as well, has been a testament that our people are determined to move towards the safer shore of democracy and of freedom. and of prosperity.
How does the crisis in Syria affect Iraq?
See, the concern we have in Iraq is because there is no light at the end of the tunnel in relation to Syria, that instability will destabilize the region and it will have a direct impact on us. Because of the border, because of the ethnicity, because of the various brotherhood we have between our two. So in that size, we already have a significant proportion of refugees. And we are concerned that the lack of progress on Syria will have an adverse impact on Iraq directly. In that sense, we are concerned. And we have shared this with our U.S. friends and United Nations and others as well, that we need to force the parties to come to the table and acknowledge each other, but also have a desire to give something and take away something at that negotiation table. At this moment, people are willing to take rather than give.
What's the Iraqi government's official relationship with the Assad government?
We recognize that government as is already sort of that was in place prior to the Syrian situation rising. We have highlighted to the government, the Syrian government, that election has to take place, representation of the people, true representation of the people has to take place, that there is no need for violence, that they have a legal, ethical responsibility to protect their people, and we will be happy to work with them. However, we also know that the issue of violence has to be from controlled from all sides. We need to try to close the tabs of providing weapons and finances for the Syrian stakeholders, political stakeholders currently. We need to bring some sense into the equation.
What do you count as your biggest challenge in the job that you're doing as ambassador?
I came here straight after the troop withdrawal, the U.S. troop withdrawal. So the U.S. interest in Iraq changed somewhat because you no longer have your boys there. So regenerating interest in Iraq in relation to economical development, political stability, looking at Iraq project as a successful project in your support of democracy, in your support of political and economical development of Iraq, stabilizing Iraq in the region, is one of the key challenges I have in making people more further interested in Iraq and trying to associate Iraq with the development. That's one of the largest challenges I would say I have.
So half of what your work is public relations?
It's important. I'm an interlocker. So I need to explain to people what's the complexity of Iraq. Mm-hmm. And also, more importantly, maybe explain to my Iraqi sides. You may be surprised. A lot of my time is spent in trying to educate our Iraqi people about what's taking place in the United States and how could the United States help in the development of Iraq as well. So I'm more or less trying to play the right interlocker in providing not just a positive image, a real image of what's taking place in Iraq.
Iraq's ambassador to the United States, Luqman Feili, he was in Seattle last week to buy a Boeing 777 for Iraq's growing airline. It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.